ella decide que los indígenas tienen que seguir siendo esclavos.
Qué desgarrador. Qué desgarrador ver lo que ha pasado en ese país que era ejemplo al mundo. Que era Bolivia antes de Evo Morales. Y ahora el país con mejores indicadores macroeconómicos, que la pobreza extrema casi la redujo a la tercera parte, la pobreza en general a la mitad, triplicó el tamaño de la economía, venció a la inflación, logró una estabilidad económica y política que no había visto en toda su historia, y pese a eso de repente explota, estalla, y estamos prácticamente ante una guerra civil. ¿Qué pasa con Bolivia?
Mucha gente se dedica a ver los errores del gobierno que sale, pero me parece que este momento no es para eso. Digamos, ¿cómo construir una mayoría? Pues Evo lo mostró, construyó, digamos, el resultado electoral es una mayoría alrededor del gobierno de Evo.
47%.
47%.
Después de 13 años de gobierno.
Es una mayoría. Pero, sin embargo, dan el golpe. Esos que dan el golpe son fascistas, digamos, son...
Es que algunos ni siquiera le llaman golpe.
Ahora, todo depende de la fortaleza de la sociedad boliviana, del pueblo. Cuando yo tenía 13 años, viví un hecho que me mandó a la política, digamos, y me fregó la vida. No,
se metió en política.
A mí me gusta
bienvenido
la vida que he vivido. Pero cuando tenía 13 años fue 73, fue el golpe de Allende. La respuesta que dimos, yo un niñito, pero digamos que dio a la izquierda en el 73, fue las armas.
Sí, yo creo que ya no hay lugar para eso. Entonces, no se puede convertir la violencia con más violencia.
Sí, hoy, digamos, esa respuesta no puede ser las armas. No puede ser, digamos. Entonces, ¿cuál es? Yo pienso que son las multitudes. Yo no.
Multitudes más un acuerdo al menos regional, no permitir estas cosas. Yo creo que hay una degradación, un retroceso muy grave en la política, calidad de la política latinoamericana. No veíamos hace unos años esto. Nosotros trabajamos muy bien con gobiernos de derecha para constituir UNASUR. Coincidíamos en aspectos como la integración, que va más allá de izquierda o derecha, en aspectos como la democracia, derechos humanos. Ya no se respeta nada. Y todo depende si eres mi amigo o mi enemigo. Si eres mi enemigo, hay que aplastarte, hay que anularte, hay que eliminarte, y se acabó el lío. Y así, créeme que estamos condenados no solo al subdesarrollo, sino al desgarramiento de nuestra sociedad, a la destrucción de nuestras sociedades.
El pacto democrático. ¿Cómo hacer que la derecha entienda la democracia?
Bueno, con esta inquietud que compartimos, despedimos este programa agradeciéndote nuevamente tu presencia aquí, Gustavo, y tus valiosísimos criterios al respecto que hemos compartido en esta tan amena conversación. Y con ustedes, amigos, hasta un próximo programa de Conversando con Correa.
Era el senador colombiano Gustavo Petro hablando ante el micrófono del expresidente ecuatoriano Rafael Correa. Esta edición de Conversando con Correa fue publicada el 28 de noviembre de 2019. Este ha sido un especial del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento al equipo de producción del programa Conversando con Correa de RT. A nombre de Norma Martínez y de nuestro equipo se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Vela. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Informativo Pacífica.
A continuación, Informativo Pacífica.
¡No te la pierdas! Because we are the 99%.
Bienvenida y bienvenido a esta edición especial del Informativo Pacífica.
En esa actividad de regular en función de la vida.
Estamos de acuerdo.
Yo estoy de acuerdo con usted en el sentido que un gobierno no puede decretar el fin del mercado. Eso lo creyó la izquierda hace un siglo.
En esta ocasión presentamos una entrevista del expresidente ecuatoriano Rafael Correa con el senador colombiano Gustavo Petro. Quédate con nosotros. Entre los temas del encuentro entre el senador colombiano y el expresidente ecuatoriano están las masivas movilizaciones en varios países de América Latina, la crítica situación social del país cafetalero, el subdesarrollo de la región y las posibles salidas para terminar con la desigualdad del modelo económico imperante. Petro habla sobre el incremento de la violencia que se ha cobrado la vida de unos 700 líderes sociales, cómo el miedo se convierte en un instrumento político y cómo la mafia usa ese miedo para controlar su territorio y la extrema derecha para hacerse elegir.
Bienvenidas amigas, bienvenidos amigos a un programa más de Conversando con Correa. Nuevamente Colombia, nuestra querida Colombia, parece un tema inagotable. Esta vez con un protagonista de la historia contemporánea de nuestra querida República de Colombia, el senador, exalcalde de Bogotá, dos veces candidato a la presidencia de la República, nuestro querido amigo Gustavo Petro. Gustavo, muchas gracias por aceptar la invitación a mi programa.
Rafael, ¿cómo está usted?
¿Cómo van?
This is Jerry McIntyre from the UK. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, baby.
And next up on the stream of free radio at freakradio.org, it's the Day After Christmas show on December 26, 2019 of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Lots of bits and snatches, rags and patches, and a few imports from here and there off of Facebook. But you might find it interesting. It's... Well, I'm going to begin with actually a possible new intro theme song. And I'm going to give you the rough version of the theme song by Utah Phillips, an old folk singer who came and went, and an old wobbly anarchist, industrial worker of the world, activist, and a musician. He was also, didn't see him too much on the streets of Santa Cruz, but he was famous around these parts for a while and actually played, I may have done some live stuff for Free Radio Santa Cruz in its earlier days. We're going to hear a little bit of him and then some of his commentary on the song that he's singing, which is an old wobbly tune. Wobbly, of course, is the old... kick out the bosses union that was strong around the turn of the last century, and it kept organizing. I was still organizing when I came to Santa Cruz in the 70s. One of my old fellow activists, Lighthouse Linda Lemaster, was a member of the IWW and introduced me to their HQ and some of their people. But anyway, here is Utah Phillips doing a little singing, and I'd like to get your opinion. Give me an email or phone in and let me know if you like this. This is a new intro song rather than the old one, which I've been playing for goodness knows how many months and certainly a number of years. Sing me a song of social significance, or the bits that I play initially at the beginning of every show. Here we go.
Forlorn and hungry, are there lots of things you lack? Is your life made up of misery? Then dump the bosses off your back. Are your clothes all torn and tattered? Are you living in a shack? Would you have your troubles scattered? Then dump the bosses off your back. Are you almost split asunder? Loaded like a long-eared jack? Boob, why don't you buck like thunder and dump the bosses off your back? All the agonies you suffer, you could end with one good whack. Stiffen up, you ornery duffer, and dump the bosses off your back. Ba ba ba.
And here's a little of Utah Phillips' commentary prior to the song, which you can also catch on YouTube. Just look for Utah Phillips.
Well, so they decided to organize. I mean, it wasn't really a decision. It gets rammed down your throat. You can only take so much. Then I suppose it was a little easier to identify who the enemy was. The process a bit more subtle than these the waning days of Babylon. Well, of course, then, you didn't have free public education, at least not for our booming people. You didn't have mass media. Well, you had songs, you had stories, and you had conversation. See, today, well, let me put it this way. All of us assign blame in our own best interest, right? Well, if we assign blame in our own best interest, that means blame is relative. And if blame is relative, then one of the important functions in society becomes who controls the blame pattern. Why is it that large bodies of workers, like in my country, assign blame downward to some welfare chiselers down at the bottom? You know, they say trying to get a little bit of something for nothing. And they never assign blame upward to the handful of big-time chiselers at the top that get a whole lot of something for doing nothing at all. Well, that's because the blame pattern is manipulated. Sure, through the public schools. You know, we give our kids over to that when we put them in public school. And then the public schools build in little automatic responses, levers and buttons. When they go into the labor force, you see, then the government reaches out through its media in every home and pushes those buttons and pulls those levers and elicits massive response for or against anything it chooses. Like I say, it was easier to identify who the enemy was. You're booming into the freight yards. You can see the private cars rolled off on the siding. You can see, as you were sweating underground, like in Butte, the mansions being built in a ring on the hills around. See, and the mansions working their way higher up the hill, the deeper you dug yourself into the ground. Okay, easy to see. And the solution was a little easier to see, too. You know, dump the bosses off your back. One thing I should mention is this music is not great poetry. You probably figured that out right away. Well, that's because it was real sin. It had to be simple because people didn't speak a lot of English or had never been to school. But it's not like your modern protest music, which tends to be introverted. A lot of it very poetic. Hard to understand, though. Middle-class music written for middle-class consumption because they got the bread to buy it, okay? What I'm saying is a lot of difference between how many miles must a white dove sail before it can rest in the sand and dump the bosses off your back. Now, that's your line in that song, by the way, an old hymn tune, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. The Wobblies like to steal the hymn tunes because they were pretty and changed the words so they made more sense.
So, just for shits and giggles, as we used to say, let's hear it again.
Are you cold, forlorn, and hungry? Are there lots of things you lack? Is your life made up of misery? Then dump the bosses off your back. Are your clothes all torn and tattered? Are you living in a shack? Would you have your troubles scattered? Then dump the bosses off your back. Are you almost split asunder? Loaded like a long-eared jack? Boob, why don't you buck like thunder and dump the bosses off your back? All the agonies you suffer, you could end with one good whack. Stiffen up, you ornery duffer, and dump the bosses off your back. Ba ba ba.
And we're going to be hearing more of Utah Phillips. Compliments of YouTube throughout the show. I had little trouble with Utah Phillips personally, but I like what he stands for. I like what he sings about. He lived until 2008 when he died in May, and I guess a bit of remembering him today. And hearing some of his songs, which were actually songs that the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, sang and organized around, which was really more important. So a couple days before Christmas on the 23rd, I meandered into the Monday Red Church Chowdown, the really big, long line, and began sticking my recorder in front of everybody's face and getting the following interviews. And let's, I kind of use them as a kickoff point or a sort of a, well, people will be speaking for themselves and I'll be occasionally interrupting is what it boils down to.
Talking with...
No.
Anonymous.
Anonymous, go ahead.
It's strange that there's a correlation to marijuana being legalized and the first payment being given to the police officers for the war on drugs and a direct correlation to meth and heroin having a spike.
So it could have to do with, I don't know, more and more people on the streets.
Well, they get the proceeds. That's what she didn't tell you, that happened. The judicial department takes the proceeds and uses it for the war on drugs, and it's kind of funny, right after that, marijuana legalization, meth and heroin became abundant after their first proceeds of taxes.
I will ponder that. Thank you both.
Look it up.
Legalization actually didn't mean marijuana became more abundant. It rather became more, in many ways, it became more difficult to legally procure it if you were poor. In Santa Cruz and other places, because of the massive restrictions, I'm thinking of California, I can't speak for other states, but from the articles I've been reading, it's been my understanding that there's been a really hard times for people who want to jump through the hoops for marijuana legalization in Santa Cruz County, and more money has indeed been pouring into drug enforcement, though you would think that this would theoretically enable more of a crackdown on hard drugs, if you are of a mind to believe that cracking down on hard drugs actually helps reduce the consumption of hard drugs, which I'm not persuaded of, but I don't have a lot of stats either way on that. I do know that certainly the idiotic war on marijuana, which is continuing and throughout the country in different places, and to some extent here in Santa Cruz, with the heavy restrictions on marijuana sales, marijuana use, it's still difficult. I mean, you can try smoking a joint in a public place. It's not legal in most places in Santa Cruz, and they haven't opened up any places where you can actually consume marijuana on the premises, though I guess that's probably the next step for those who have the means to go into classy joints where this can be done. No pun intended. Don't know. But for folks who are eating at this Red Church meal, who don't have a lot of money, who can see things operating at a ground level, well, they see what they see and they talk about what they see.
Oh, a lady not in the streets, but she was in Salvation Army, and she was taking pictures on her video, and she got booted out. Now she's in Ramada Inn. She's 66 years old, and she's got to spend 5 days, and then she's allowed to go back to Salvation Army on Christmas Day.
Wow, and we've been talking with...
Ann.
Thank you, Ann.
Thank you, hope so.
All right.
We need peaceful Christmas for now, you know, until later on, you know.
Revolution tomorrow, peaceful Christmas tonight.
Yeah.
Fair enough. If you don't freeze to death on Christmas Eve, of course.
And Safe Park.
That's good. How is that going?
Yeah.
Actually, I like it. I don't have to worry about waking up with a $48 piece of toilet paper stuck to my windshield.
Good point. Thank you. Cooper, anything from the your neck of the woods?
Well, I'm happy to say that a lot more of our crew have little tents. And they only take up half the sidewalk, so they're perfect size. And
nobody's been getting tickets?
Well, nobody's been getting tickets.
Nobody's been getting sprinkled on by the Loud Nelson sprinkler?
No, well, they're off, I think, because of the rain, but you never know. And so everything, things have been...
How many folks are sleeping there?
Let's see, we had like... maybe 10 now? But it varies. But the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, probably six that are solid, six, seven that are solid there.
Any other reports from other encampments?
No, for the most part, we haven't been hassled about being there. Today I was hassled by one of the, I don't know if he's a safety officer, but he has a police badge on. So I didn't know if he didn't get the memo that people are not to be harassed.
Yep,
if there's
no tickets.
Yeah, no tickets. I told him, go ahead and give me tickets.
We've been talking with?
This is Cooper.
Thanks, Cooper.
And, of course, there is no memo, as far as I know. As I've said repeatedly on this show, they're not using the camping ban, but police and rangers and a harassing first alarm security guard who are threatening to call the police and rangers are using no trespassing, park closed, public nuisance, blocking the sidewalk, et cetera, et cetera. And other ordinances that they just either misapply or just threaten to use without having to do them because people do not want to have even the prospect of their stuff being confiscated. Although as people get angrier and angrier and they find their stuff being taken anyway, depending on the whim of the officer, or the, you know, the distaste the officer has for people who express appropriate outrage at this kind of behavior, you're going to find, I think, well, I don't know, you may find resistance growing. A lot of these interviews were taken at the very beginning of the Chow Line when I didn't have a lot of time to talk to people, so I'm going to try to be more strategic if I do more of these interviews, as I probably will on Mondays, and catch people further back so they have more time to speak if they wish. I try to get in as many people as possible. Cooper, who just spoke, is of course a musician who plays, I don't know if it's nightly, but on a number of nights in front of the Palomar Hotel on Pacific Avenue. And she and a bunch of other folks have sort of pitched tents on the sidewalk, initially right next to Loudoun Nelson Center, then when they were doused with sprinklers that were turned on, even though the sprinklers you would think would not be spraying the sidewalk. Why would you want to water the sidewalk unless you want to harass people sleeping there? They moved across Washington Street to an area where on the residential side, they were there for a number of weeks, maybe even months. And they moved away at the request of, I think it was the request of the residents. Maybe it was under pressure from the police. And they moved back to the Loudoun Nelson Center where I saw them a week ago. And then I guess Cooper was reporting on Monday, which was just a few days ago. And that's where they are now. Some of them, again, little encampments like spread throughout the city. That's one of the few that I'm really aware of. There's another one down, of course, on Coral Street in the near the tracks. And lest somebody think I'm blowing up people's encampments, this is such a familiar sight and a familiar spot that I don't think that's what's happening. There have been rumors of an actual takeover, an encampment or a building occupation or a garage occupation coming up in the beginning days of the new year, and if that happens, I'll try to be there to do some reporting on it. If you want to be a supporter to any of these activities, you should give a call to me at 423-4833, and I'll pass your information along so you can be advised if protest demonstrations or support actions are coming up. That's 423-4833. You can also give me an email at rnorse3, that's R-N-O-R-S-E, rnorse3, number 3, at hotmail.com. Or you can contact Alicia Kuhl, who is part of the California Homeless Union, who's also been keeping a kind of a close watch on this situation, at 831-431-7766, 831-431-7766. And now back to the Red Church.
Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, hoody.
you.
And I'm glad that you get things out to the community on the radio. We've been having people come to our spot, our location at Lao Nelson.
Right.
And bring clothes, warm clothes.
That's good.
Blankets, socks, I need it.
That's good. Today this happened?
No, throughout the week. Plus food, so I can feed like 10, 12 people without having any. I shouldn't say that because it would make us feel alive.
Dry tip, yum yum. Any reports?
I'm reminded of the immortal words of Solomon who said...
Uh-oh, not as immortal as they might have been. Yeah. Any reports from the street?
What?
Any street reports for free radio? Anything happened to you?
It's crazy out there. Way crazy.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
It's way crazy.
And what's happening out there?
All my shit's being taken.
Oh, shit. What got taken?
Everything.
Yeah, this happened today, or?
No, this happened a few days ago. Last week.
Bummer. So, we've been talking with? If you want to say.
Kelly.
Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah.
All right. Any reports from the street? No? Any street reports?
No.
Reports from the street of any kind?
Merry Christmas.
And the ho-ho to you. Mm-hmm. May your hat be with you. I like your hat.
Thank you.
Any reports from the street?
Huh?
Anything you want to pass on?
Merry Christmas to everybody.
What's that again?
Say Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody. That's all.
And I hope they say that to you, too.
I hope so as well. If you're not, well, God bless.
May the policeman avoid you with a ticket for it.
May what?
May the cop avoid you with a ticket for it. In other words, not come near you.
I have no idea what you're saying.
In other words, I don't want police are going after people for being outside. So I hope they're not going after you.
No, because I stay in the shelter. And
how is that?
The shelter is awesome. That's the place for, you know, homeless, and they help them with what we need. Hallelujah.
Do you have a good report from them? Or
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
How long have you been there?
4 months.
In which shelter are we talking about?
The Cove Street shelter.
Yeah.
One, I believe, that is indoor. The other ones are like tents and stuff like that, right?
Right, right. And we've been talking with, if you want to say?
Loretta Marcus.
Thank you. Cheers. Any reports from the streets? Tina?
You shouldn't have to fight to go potty.
That's for damn sure. Where's your piss bottle? Probably the wrong approach. It's just having it on the line, probably.
Yeah, no.
And Stina is, I guess she's still on the Catch Committee. That's the city council's kind of cover-up group, which is supposed to be working out solutions for the city council to probably ignore. But who knows? Maybe they'll whip in some token activity the second Tuesday in January, which is when they next meet. But again, that's when they simply propose things for future agendas. Who knows? Maybe they'll act on something that first Tuesday in second Tuesday in January, that first meeting in January. Stina did propose months ago that the Loud and Nelson bathrooms be reopened because she felt it was ridiculous, as do I and many others, that the bathrooms were closed. In fact, it's not just ridiculous. It is dangerously and very targetedly discriminatory against poor and homeless people. And it is kind of a nasty form of class privilege and bureaucratic power and really disregard for both tradition and basic community compassion and just ordinary decency and public health and safety to close these bathrooms. But it is a surrender to a kind of bigotry and fear that has become, it's struggling to become the dominant narrative. Some of us are struggling to make sure it doesn't become the dominant narrative. Anyway, Stina's plan, as I've mentioned perhaps in past broadcasts, is to get the Catch Committee members to bring a little bottle of urine to city council meetings and say, here, since we can't get into the bathrooms to dispose of this, you take care of it, which I think is a great idea. I've offered to support her, but she so far hasn't done that publicly. She's done it to the Catch meetings, I understand. She's brought a little bottle of urine there, but I think she was reprimanded for it by one of the two co-chairs. Maybe not quite sure who did, but we'll see if she carries on, and who knows, maybe we'll have a shit-in one of these days. Not such a bad idea, however outrageous it sounds. It's far more outrageous to lock bathrooms and force people to drop their pants and soil the bushes and the grounds nearby.
Still working on that. I did talk to Duke Glover, though.
What do you say?
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah. Well, there you go. That's a council member for you.
And his nice purple shirt that always comes up blue on the screen.
You've got a nice shirt on.
Yeah, it's always the same shirt.
That's all right. They still like you. I'll see you in the surge thing if you show.
Yeah, I'll show. Thanks.
All right.
Heard much from or tried to contact Drew Glover much. Though I was reaching him quite regularly before council meetings, and he was helpful and cooperative, and actually the only council member to hold pre-council agenda discussion meetings, so you can actually talk about what's coming up on the agenda, make your own suggestions to Glover, and on occasion he would bring those up, although he has not in recent months acted to try to force the mayor, at that time Mayor Watkins, now we have Mayor Cummings, to put an item on the next agenda by a majority vote of four of the seven council members. Otherwise, it's just at the whim of the mayor and the city manager, who meet with the staff heads privately, away from the public, away from the rest of the council, and make the decision about what we can even talk about at city council on the agenda, other than a very brief discussion of something not on the agenda during the very brief oral communication period at 7 o'clock in the evening. Drew a call and see if I can get a sort of a New Year's sort of summation and update from him, although I think he also continues to have a show every other week on one of the FM stations on, I think it's on Friday, K-Squid, I believe it is. In fact, I think I'll give him a call right now and see if I can see what he's got planned and what he sees looking back over the last year. Usually I don't really call him unless I have something very specific that I want him to address, which I think is the best way to go, because just chittering and chattering with council members provides a kind of, gives one, people who are listening, false hopes, not to mention gives the person who's doing the chittering and the chattering false hopes. And it also is a form of catering to folks in positions of power rather than trying to organize our own power, which is what we have to do, really, to raise issues and get them addressed, and or address them ourselves, so then we get Chris Krohn grabbing a flag and running out in front of the parade and then leading the parade, but only once other people are raising the issue strongly and mobilizing all the people. Although I've got to say, Chris has gotten better at least supporting Drew Glover in raising these issues at City Council in the last year, and in even to some extent raising them himself on occasion. Sometimes he can even beat Glover to the punch on this. Although I think the two of them have been significantly cowed, and they're not really holding what I think are the independent kinds of press conferences they need to hold separately to get to change the narrative on the homeless issue, which is the main bludgeon that the recall people that are recalling him, trying to recall both the two of those council members at an early March election that's coming up in almost in just in little over 2 months. It needs to be really clarifying the bogus information given out by the city manager and his deputy, Susie O'Hara. I guess now it's Megan Bunch and Ron Prince, who are, I've got to say also involved in this is Fred Keeley is the guy who kind of runs the Catch Committee as a, he tries to appear to be an objective, nonpartisan facilitator. And he probably sees himself that way. I do not see him that way. It's not how I analyze and interpret what he does at the meetings, which is to, in essence, it kind of shovels, now he's shoveling public comment to the end of the meeting or into the agenda items. And he, like it gives the impression of real public participation and action when actually people are spinning their wheels and going nowhere, and outside people are freezing and getting drenched. So it's really kind of a despicable situation as far as I'm concerned. And as I told him, more or less, when we had a, I confess, a 3.5 hour, 4 hour breakfast. Well, he was buying breakfast, so I got the breakfast out of it, as did Keith McHenry and Alicia Cool. But he hasn't answered any of the questions that I've put to him in any specific particular way, although he claims, oh, I'm just the facilitator, so I don't have to answer any of these questions substantively. Let me review what those questions were for you that I put to him in an email and brought to him in person. The questions I had for Fred were, first of all, what is your current position and what are your powers? And he declined to answer this question for a number of hours. And finally, I think he ended up saying something like, I'm just a facilitator and the committee has all the powers. But I really was asking, for those who want to place any faith in this committee, are they interested in any, is he interested in advocating him personally for any of the following? Directing law enforcement to end removal operations against existing survival encampments, given the lack of legal alternate shelter. Ending the seizure and destruction of homeless survival gear. Provide business hours, if not 24-hour access, to retrieving confiscated property at the police department or wherever else it's being stored. Immediate placement of porta-potties in the spots Keith McHenry has suggested to city managers Martine Bernal at Bernal's request. But Bernal hasn't gotten back to him, just as Keeley hasn't gotten back to me on any of these questions. And well, here's some more. 24-hour opening of the bathrooms in the parks and our parking garages. Restoring community access to the Loudon Nelson bathrooms. Suspension or removal of the trespass ordinances in the city lots and garages. Ending the use of alter ego ordinances, which is to say alternative ordinances, used to affect the same result as the camping ban, which I mentioned earlier in this broadcast, stayaways for infractions in parks, blocking the sidewalk law, public nuisance law, closed area law, illegal lodging ordinance, opening up of public buildings to allow survival occupation, establish trash pickups at encampment areas throughout the city, provide immediate support for an expansion of Brent Adams Warming Center and storage programs to facilitate 250 possible users, publicly support injection inhalation centers, restoration of city needle exchange, shifting the county program to a needs-based rather than a one-to-one system of needle exchange, and support secondary needle exchange as proposed by the Harm Reduction Coalition to the state authorities. Direction to public agencies to lay off of Camp Phoenix-style homeless-run campgrounds this winter, and physical, legal, and media support for such survival camps that arise if threatened by city, county, or state authorities. And this was presented to him about December 16th. Well, actually, I think I put it out as a flyer on the 16th. It was presented earlier. I remember us talking about, in any detail, was Fred's idea that there should be standards of behavior for people in transitional campgrounds that are set up, and that those standards of behavior have to include ways of excluding people, presumably like drug users, hard drug users. Could we come to accept and buy into that narrative, which is sort of, Keith McHenry brought this up, a bit too much like the proposals that Robert Morsbutt, I think I have his name right, who is the "We don't allow feeding in public anymore because it only enables the homeless and encourages people to be homeless," or some such thing. Or encourages them to stay away from services and not to sign up for our programs, whatever they happen to be, however wretched they may be, who has been chosen as the, quote, the homeless czar by Führer Trump. That's President Trump, those who like such titles. I call it Obama the Führer when he was the Führer, and Trump's the Führer when he's the Führer. Not that they really have the same kind of powers, but that they are given the same kind of falsely and inappropriately given the same kind of respect. while they preside over the immiseration of the country, the bombing of people throughout the world who are the recipient of that kind of U.S. pressure. Anyway, Catch does have a meeting coming up in early January, which I'll probably be talking about as we get into early January. And I guess I should probably just leave it there and go for a little music so I can decompress here and give you a chance to decompress too. The same kinds of inquiries were made to the police department, by the way, as when we went to the police department a week ago when we had our last Huff meeting. We didn't have a Huff meeting yesterday or a Conscience in Action meeting. We were going to have a small one, but the people who had planned to come developed other plans, and also the rain was coming down, and I had a vehicle problem, and it was a lot of stuff that conspired to stop us. But it would have been small. But we will be there next week on Wednesday at the Sub Rosa at noon. And so you're invited to come on down and join us. That's right next to the bike church. In the meantime, here's some music.
The new ruling party is holding the aces. The rest of the cards are all missing faces. I'm sorry I can't know you today. What can one say? I will not obey. Give us your sons and give us your daughters. No one is safe or immune from the slaughter. How indifference makes them rage. What can one say? I will not obey. National Guard or freedom fighters, all houses belong to cigarette lighters. But who hides in the smoke? What can one say? I will not obey. Better perhaps to perish outside of the bunkers where our generals hide. I turn away and spit. What can one say? I will not obey. Give us the minds of your children to learn the substance of books we have not yet burned. But can they read the sky for rain? What can one say? I will not obey. Soon all tyrants will feel our impatience. We choose to create our own combinations. I was always willing to agree. What can one say? I will not obey. The essence of contract is agreement, not coercion or obedience. And agreement is sacred. What can one say? I will not obey. There are so few wars of people's liberation, for the people have so seldom risen. Only the armed faction. Listen, the armed faction lies. They recreate the state through their action. When the people rise, it is not they, but the state which dies. I sing this song for the prisoners' release, most of all now for the new state police. You see, the guns have changed hands. Again, what can one say? I will not obey.
That was Utah Phillips, I Will Not Obey. And just to follow up on that song a little, here's Utah talking about, I Will Not Obey, the song. And Eamon Hennessy, another anarchist.
Eamon Hennessy, besides wanting me to become a pacifist, wanted me to learn how to become an anarchist. It was a word, like most people, I was afraid of, because it always meant violence and chaos. It never occurred to me that the capitalist system is violence and chaos decade after decade. It certainly is today. I didn't know what he meant, though. Eamon, besides having to deal with my capacity for violence when I first hit the Joe Hill House there in Salt Lake City, you had to deal with a lot of violence in that house, with a lot of Second World War vets that had come back, broken people, a lot of them alcoholics. And it was always stuff getting broken up and people getting broken up. And Emmett dealt with it in very, very creative and very compassionate ways. Emmett said, since I didn't know if I could still live in the country anymore, he said, you know you love the country. you love the country. You go in and out of town, and you come back with these wonderful songs about people and places. You know you love the country. He quoted Mark Twain, a loyalty to the country always, loyalty to the government when it deserves it. Yeah, I do love the country very, very much. He said, "What you don't love the state. You know, you love the country, but you can't stand the state. Now, get it straight, you know, it was an essential distinction that I had been neglecting. Well, then, having established that firmly in my mind, he said, well, he got me onto the notion that anarchy isn't a noun but an adjective that defines the tension between moral autonomy and political authority, especially in the area of combinations, whether they're going to be voluntary or coercive. Most of us are born into highly coercive combinations, marital combinations, boss, employee, student, teacher, parent, child. These are combinations which we inherit. They're culturally compelled. We are not the architects of these combinations. We don't have any choice in them. He said, all we ever wanted to do is to be centered enough in ourselves that we could come together and create voluntary combinations, non-coercive combinations of which we are the architects, which define our needs as we see them and not as they're defined for us. Well, yeah, he said, if you and I can agree that we will both do our share of the work of the world, that's the work around the Joey Hill House. If you and I can agree that we will only take what we need and put back what we can, if you and I can agree that we'll care for the afflicted, and mostly if you and I can agree that we won't hurt anybody, all the things you can't get from the boss and from the state, then we can begin to build between us that voluntary combination and get the work of the world done without the boss and without the state. Well, I've said that to so many young people, especially lately, who get this idea that anarchy is some kind of nihilism. Oh, you can't tell me what to do. No anarchy, you've got to tell yourself what to do, because you've got to learn to become your own best government, and believe me, you can do it better and cheaper than they can. What I tell my young friends is, your job in the world is to find out what your real work is. Your real work. Work's what you do for yourself. Toil's what you do for somebody else. And you're going to, that work is what's going to satisfy your soul. That work is what animates you, which permits you to live in the exercise of your own unique and specific virtue. Now, you're going to take a lot of dumb jobs. You're going to take a lot of jobs that you don't like, or jobs that take you nowhere. You're going to pay maybe a dumb wage. You could have a good boss or a bad boss, but the boss is the boss, and you can't laugh off that curse. But if you do that toil, you're going to take part of the money and part of the time and use it to acquire tools and skills that enable you to do your work. And you've got that. Someday you're going to pick up the phone and call in well. And you're going to start to do your work, put your work in the world. And if it's something you find out you can't do by yourself, you find other people who are like-minded, who want to do the same sort of thing. And you come together and you make that voluntary combination. I always wanted to write that old man a song, not about him. He was vain. I wouldn't give him the satisfaction. But something mulched up out of his thought as an anarchist.
Back to some folks on the street getting something to eat indoors.
Hey, man. Any reports from the street? No? Any street reports? No? Reports from the street? No. Anything you want to say for free radio? No? Okay. Sonny, anything you want to pass on?
Yeah, look out for each other, and how can we get along to building this house for each other and stop taking from the individuals who are in the same room? I mean, because we're all trying to build and get off of our feet from where we're at. So why don't we just look out for one another? Like, look over to your left side or to your right side, and that's your brother's keeper or your sister's keeper. You know what I mean? That's what we should do. Gain the knowledge from our elders and peers. And
what was before, you know what I mean? Because it's hurting a lot of people and destroying a lot of families. Let's make this year better than what it was before.
Anything happened in the last week that you want to comment on?
Oh, I'm standing my ground. No officer is going to actually give me a ticket for sleeping, you know what I mean? Either behind Starbucks or over there loud and announcing, you know? And just standing strong and firm, I mean, house us. And that doesn't mean a police department or a police area, you know? That means give us a house just like other people are the same way, you know what I mean? We deserve that.
Yeah. You know. Have you been threatened with tickets from anybody recently?
Oh, not threatened with tickets, but I'm not going to sign a ticket or anything, you know, this morning, two officers, but that's right behind Starbucks, and I'm not going to be woken up early in the morning like that, you know, it's not required.
Thank you, Sonny.
I shouldn't have to stay up 72/7 in order to actually protect things that I have or being stolen from the things I've earned, you know what I mean? I'm actually out there looking out for people, you know what I mean? I've asked him, he's asked me to let loose of your weight, you've gained too much. So I look out for elders and peers who are out here freezing, and I give it to them. And
we've been talking with the governor to go
and everything other than that, you know, I'm going out there at nighttime, and I don't want another person to be freezing to death out there. It's cold out here. I mean, so let me be out there as a soldier in our battlefield and help them, you know what I mean? Because it kind of sucks. I mean, I have a few blankets in my area, but I'm looking out for the ones
we've been talking with.
Sonny Lopez.
Forgive me for cutting you off.
Mm-hmm.
Any reports from the street?
Just stay positive and put God first.
And we've been talking with. You want to say who you are?
Oh, yeah. My name is Dwayne Wright. I'm with the Holy Christian Services.
All right. Crystal, any comments?
Hi. You know me. I always have comments. I messed up the Tuesday speaking, and I just really want, you know, if the weather gets below freezing or it's raining, that they give hotel vouchers because of our officers are breaking tent poles and ruining people's survival gear.
What happened to you in the last week?
No, but I know people that it has had happened to, and that's the only reason why I'm asking for a hotel voucher, because they took it upon themselves to, you know, put their hands on stuff that wasn't theirs, and now that, oh.
Thank you. We've been talking with
Crystal, and also there's, like, no cars in the parking lot at the hotels. Why aren't they filled up with vouchers?
You're here. Thank you, Crystal.
Yeah.
Any reports?
No.
Thank you. Any reports from the street?
Not today, sir.
Thank you.
Is that for real?
It is.
There was in the 40s.
Hey, any street reports?
Street reporters?
Yeah.
About State of Jefferson, we're talking about.
On the Oregon border in California, they wanted to incorporate a new state, and they wanted to name it State of Jefferson.
Anything happening in Santa Cruz recently?
No, just good vibes.
That's good.
No violence.
Thank you. And we've been talking with...
What now?
Your name is...
Kelly.
Thank you, Kelly. Linda, anything you want to pass on?
I don't have much voice today. Just catching up with people. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, tired, cranky, well.
Less than 48 hours till the Santa bomb.
Ooh.
I got red socks here tonight.
All right.
So I guess I had Christmas already.
You got tri-tip coming up.
I hope so. What about pork bellies? Do they taste like pork?
I have no idea.
Me neither.
But don't buy them. It's not a good idea.
Thank you. We're talking with
Linda, Lighthouse Linda.
Thank you, Lighthouse.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, you wanted to talk to the red shirt, the one that got beat up while he was sleeping?
Which one is this?
He's with the white hair and the red shirt at the end, far corner.
White hair?
Table.
White hair.
Red sweater vest.
With?
Janai haired.
And you're pointing out to me a guy you say was beaten up recently?
While he was sleeping in a sleeping bag on the street.
His reporter, you saw it?
Well, I saw his face, and it was pretty bad. They broke his cheekbones and everything. There were two young kids, teenagers, and he was out. He was sleeping.
Do we know his name?
Steve.
You know his last name?
No, but I've known him for a couple of years. And
when did it happen, you know?
About a week ago. So I know he wouldn't make it up.
What up, okay. If he can get his contact information, get it for me.
I will.
Thanks, Denai.
And the she was talking about it with Steve Conover, who has in the past been an active HUF participant in Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Recently, he's been in hard times, and he's spoken, and I think we may have a bit from him, and I think he has talked about this assault in the past, and I don't know. I think he's been preparing. He was when I got caught up with him later in the meal, which was happening. He was preparing to try to get into the Association of Faith Communities program, I believe, in his vehicle. And so we didn't have much time to talk, but I believe he has given me a description of that assault, but I'm not entirely sure, and I'll try to get it in the future. If anybody has any information about assaults that have happened, please give me a call, 423-4833, and leave a message as to any details you have, contact information, and so forth. I'm not saying that anything can be done about it, but I think it should be documented and publicized. You have to decide yourself, however, whether you want to take the risk of, well, you can, if you want it to be done, if you want to get that, give the information anonymously, you can also do that at 423-4833.
Any reports from the street here?
Unused buildings are the real crime.
Anything you want to say, Bruce?
Happy holidays!
And a ho-ho to you.
Yeah!
Any street reports, guys? Reports from the street, Greg, anything tonight?
I'm losing my voice.
Oh, okay, well, so, don't talk too loud.
Yeah, well, it's about the quality, you know. You know what Rumi said?
Well,
I can't remember, but he said something cool about...
How'd you sleep last night?
Pretty good.
You were in your vehicle, yeah?
Not mine, but in the back of somebody else's.
So you were saying, Bill, when I spoke to you yesterday. Sounds good.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Anything happen to you on the street today you want to pass on?
No, it was all good. I just hung out at the doctor's and took care of a few minor, very minor medical things. And HPHP is awesome. I know some other things, services are not so good around that area, but HPHP is awesome.
Sounds good. And we've been talking with
Greg.
Thanks, Robert. Thank you, Greg. Any street reports?
The situation with the Ross camp, huh?
There is no Ross camp at the moment.
But there's another one down further down Highway 9. Is there not?
If there is, I haven't seen it, but you could be right.
No, there's the tent city thing. That's still happening, I think, isn't it?
There was a tent city that they've set up in November that was taken down after 5 days.
Oh, I thought that was set back up again this winter, this time again. That's what Andy, he's sitting right there, I mentioned to me. He's there right now. He's sitting right, Andy Davis.
Oh, okay, we're coming out.
No, that's all. That covers it.
We've been talking with
Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
And Matt actually was referring to the 1220 River Street camp. I think the city runs $75,000 for 60 people per month campground that... Was the city's pretext for destroying the Ross camp in May, and again, although they couldn't really use it as a good excuse when they moved to destroy Camp Phoenix, the second Ross camp in November, it's their pretext for they were providing shelter so we can bully people out of the spaces they're in when we want to, whenever we feel like it. Which is what the police and Parks and Rec Rangers do on a nightly basis and on a daily basis, depending on, who complains to them that they don't like these unsightly people hanging around.
Any reports from the street?
Any what?
Reports you want to pass on to free radio?
I didn't say no.
Thank you. Any street reports?
Yes.
All right, let's hear it.
Umado bajar maran gan daye ye ye yo mare tunam sauru vasai that is that
the music of
Ariane of Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
Any reports from the street? No? Okay. Street reports, Bob?
Huh?
Anything?
Oh, yeah.
What do you got?
I got to tell you sometime, but not right now.
Okay.
Things at McDonald's, so I finally have something.
I want to hear about it. Just let me know when.
Oh, McDonald's. Oh, we're going to call the cops on you.
Oh, yeah? Did they force you out?
No, they threatened it. They threatened.
Did you stay or did you go?
No, I stayed.
Good for you. And did they?
They said I wasn't listening, but I was listening.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah. Hey! Yeah.
And this was an announcement, day before Christmas, on December 23rd. Some folks had set up a table and they were giving away blankets and other survival gear, which is very nice. Of course, one day a year is one day a year. And it also, of course, helps everybody who's doing that on that one day feel real good about themselves, even if they're turning their eyes away or worse the rest of the year.
I have a ton of coats, and I only have a few backpacks, so it's kind of first come, first serve, and I apologize for that. But if you guys want to start lining up, we can do that, and start distributing what we have. And thank you all. Merry Christmas.
So you
were real in the real in the real into the holiday spirit.
I wish they were rest of the year. It'll be nice. You know. Which McDonald's was this?
Up on
Mission Street or Ocean Street?
On Mission Street.
And you were a patron or you were simply a?
I've been going there for a while, and having a coffee and stuff like that.
And what happened?
Well. It takes a while to explain, but one day the guy told me, gave me, get out of here and need to leave in 15 minutes, and then the next day they got the spiel about the cops.
And you've been continuing to patronize in spite of that?
No, I would rather went outside yesterday, this morning. I can cook a better, my own meal that I cook.
Yeah.
Is better and hotter than theirs.
And you don't kick yourself out of your own oatmeal either, for that matter. We've been talking with
Bob.
Thanks, Bob. Any reports from the street? I hear that a new camp opened up, somebody says. No. Any reports, Joe? Any street reports?
I don't know.
If you come up with some, let me know.
I see stuff all the time, but what can you say? I mean, it is what it is. I work for the streets team now.
How is that?
I think it's good. I think it has good principles. Sometimes it's difficult, too. It's nothing I can probably share. But I mean, it's one of many things that was necessary a long time ago. It's like we need to build this and build this up. I get frustrated with the slowness of everything. I mean, people struggling with the Ross camp and that and this and that. It's like, why can't Santa Cruz just build some very simple, basic units and start getting people in and through? I just don't get it.
They don't want to. They want to drive you away. That's the plan, I'm afraid, because they're bananas. We've been talking with, if you want to say.
I don't really have anything to say, but except that I hope that people are warm during the holiday season.
Thanks. Any reports on?
I'm glad to be here. I don't know what else to say. I'm glad that people will seem to have some joy and some health, and that's a good thing. I don't know. Beyond that, I'm not sure.
And we've been talking with?
This is Harriet.
Harriet? Sorry, I called you Helen, Harriet.
That's okay. God bless you.
And Harriet is the regular pianist who provides the music at these events. She was in line for the food.
It was an H anyway.
Yes, that's cool.
Thank you. Any reports from the street?
On the what?
Any street reports, anything that's happened to you you want to pass on?
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
And ho, 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 ho.
How are you?
Actually, I say, ho, ho, ho.
How are you?
And do you take your... Serge, anything you want to say?
No.
Well, fair enough. Any reports from the street?
Yes, that's getting jumped for a bag weed now.
Yeah, nothing bigger, nothing's happened.
No. No hassles, nobody took your backpack lately?
No, I just got jumped for a bag of weed.
Oh, that's great. Did you get away with a bag of weed?
No.
They got the weed?
They got the weed. Yeah. I got a fat lip and
oh, great.
A knot on my temple.
When did this happen?
Hell, probably 5 hours ago.
Oh, boy. And where did this happen?
This happened over, over by the fairground.
And how many people were involved?
Three.
They just walked, and this is during the day.
Yeah.
And you were alone?
Yep.
Did you get in a good blow, or?
I got one of them down.
All right.
That's good enough, I guess.
Shit, sorry to hear, but that's all you lost, though, was the weed.
Yeah.
They didn't take any of your rest of your shit.
Uh-huh.
Good work.
We were trying.
Hey, we've been talking with...
Hey, Billy.
Thanks, Bill, but do you mind if I put this on the air?
If you can cut out me killing me.
All right, all right.
I just stood in line to say Merry Christmas. Well, fuck you, too. See you, though.
Hey, I got a motorhome now in my place, free.
Oh, good, good.
Hey, no, I mean, we'll catch up to you, all right, Robert?
Any reports from the street?
Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to report from the street for free radio?
Oh, wonderful, yeah.
Anything you want to say?
No. Nothing at all.
Okay. Well,
I've got very little ever to say.
Well.
What is your name again?
I'm Robert.
Robert Norris, right?
Yes.
I remember, we did you in the library once, and you had a $40 fine, and the reason was good, so I canceled it, but I remember you were generous enough to put the money into the donation box. And I'm one of your rare admirers. I think you're one of the few people.
You're
with
the two people in town who admire me.
You're one of the few people who have the courage to stand up for the poor and to tell the city council where they belong.
And you can do the same.
No, I'm not an activist.
Well,
I'd like to talk to
this man.
I talk to a friend or two, but not to large numbers. It's not my style.
Well, then you talk to the people you talk to.
But I'm an admirer. I was at a party with 8 people recently, and your name came up, and most of them were vilifying you, and I said, up, and one of them, who's a former attorney in Los Angeles, said, you're the only person I've ever heard who would say good things to say. No, you're, go ahead. I'll go after you. I was told I was the only person he'd ever seen in Santa Cruz to say a good word for Norris.
Well, good for you.
I'm an admirer. Yeah, well, I'm an admirer.
Let's keep that praise coming, okay?
All right, I do.
You want to say who you are?
Anthony Thomas.
Thank you, Anthony.
Yeah, I work in the library, public library.
Oh, main branch?
All over. I fill in all over the county.
Okay.
I'm on call whenever people are gone. I fill in.
Thank you, Anthony.
It's wonderful to see you.
Yeah, it's good
to see you for a while. Yeah. You're the one who does some good.
I would like it if that were true.
You do good. No, I know that. I have faith.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.
All right. Any reports, sir? Okay. Any street reports?
I did have to mace somebody today.
How'd that happen?
Crazy meth monkeys screaming in people's faces. One runs straight at me after he'd just been following me for about 20 feet. So I put him on the ground and left him screaming there.
Where was this?
I can't say because I don't know if I'm averting any type of agency right now.
Oh, well, thank you, sir. Whatever that...
Whatever my name may be, right?
Get some food, that's what I say. If any.
Happy holidays anyways!
I can accept that.
How about something from City Council?
City Council, they're in recess, old man. Sorry.
Well, okay.
They've been in recess for years, actually.
Yeah. Trying to remember that Good Times article about some of the things going on.
Well, the events of the year, yeah. From the Good Times perspective.
Well,
anything else?
All I can say is we do our best, and a loving God does the rest.
Hardy har har. Thank you so much.
On the slide.
The Joe Hill best song. Sorry, we almost missed it. Chorus is...
there is power, there is power in a band of working folks when we stand hand in hand. That's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. I'll get you the chorus. There is power, there is power in a band of working folks when we stand. All right. Oh, would you have freedom from wage slavery and come join the grand industrial band? Oh, would you from misery and hunger be free? Come on, do your share, land and hand. There is power, there is power in a band of working folks when we stand. Would you have wings up in heaven to fly and start here with a rag on your back? But there is power in a band of working folks when we stand hand in hand. That's the power that must rule in every land. One industrial union brand. Oh, if you like sluggers to feed in your head, don't organize all unions despise. If you want nothing before you are dead, shake hands with your boss and look wise. But there is power in a band of working folks when we stand hand in hand. That's the power that must rule in every land. One industrial union brand. So come all ye workers from every land and come join the grand industrial band. Then we our share of this earth shall demand. Come on, do your share, lend a hand. There is power in a band of working folks when we stand hand in hand. That's the power that must rule in every land. One industrial union brand.
And that was There Is Power in a Union. Again, Utah Phillips. So here's a rather troubling article from the December 21st San Francisco Chronicle. It's headed, Police Video Shows Beating. Sonoma Sheriff Moves to Fire Deputy Involved by Alejandro Serrano and Evan Cernofsky. Graphic video footage released Friday showed that a disabled carjacking victim killed by Sonoma County law enforcement officers was pulled through a car window by a deputy who punched him, choked him, and slammed his face against the vehicle as a second deputy shocked him multiple times with a taser. Sheriff Mark Essek released the body-worn camera footage while he announced announcing he is seeking to fire Deputy Chief Blunt, who beat and choked David Glenn Ward, the 52-year-old Petaluma man who died the morning of November 27th. Essek called the deputy's conduct extremely troubling in a publicly released video that included footage of the fatal encounter. Blunt, who could not be immediately reached for comment, has 10 days to appeal the notice of termination, Essek said. In the footage, officers state that Ward resisted being pulled through the window and bit them. Blunt's attorney, Harry Stern, said he would be releasing a statement late Friday. The Sonoma County Deputy Sheriff's Association, the union that represents Blunt, referred all inquiries to Stern, the attorney. The encounter happened after Blunt, another sheriff's deputy, and two Sebastopol police officers mistook Ward for a car theft suspect after he had reported his green Honda Civic taken in a carjacking 3 days earlier. Ward had retrieved the vehicle but didn't alert police, officials said. When officers spotted the vehicle and tried to stop him, Ward fled, leading to an early morning chase that started near Bloomfield and Murray Roads, south of Sebastopol, and ended 5 minutes later when deputies spun the vehicle out, disabling it. Body camera footage showed an officer with a gun drawn shouting at Ward to keep his hands up as officers moved toward the vehicle. Show me your fucking hands! Show me your hands! Deputy Jason Little shouted, pointing a gun at Ward. Turn off the fucking car! Ward appeared to be unable to open the door with one hand and rolled down his window. I can't believe this. I'm the injured party in this, Ward said. He later asked, why are you fucking harassing me all the time? Blunt told Ward, give me your hands. And a second later began tugging him from the car window. All right, I'm getting out. I'm getting out, Ward said a moment before yelling, my legs, my legs. Blunt shouted that Ward bit him and about 15 seconds later punched the back of his head. He pressed Ward's head against the frame of the car door and then smashed Ward's face against it twice. Ward moaned before Blunt knocked his face against the frame one more time as another deputy deployed a taser. About 6 seconds after Ward was shocked, Blunt placed him in a chokehold for more than 30 seconds. At that point, other officers opened the passenger door and dragged Ward out, putting him on the ground face down and handcuffing him. Little and Blunt both said Ward had bitten them during the encounter. Ward was unresponsive after being pulled from the vehicle and later died at a hospital, authorities said. The Marin County Coroner's Office has not determined a cause of death. The Santa Rosa Police Department is investigating the killing, and county prosecutors will ultimately decide whether to file any criminal charges. Essex called Blunt's conduct unacceptable and served him a notice of termination Thursday after two investigators he commissioned to probe the deputy's actions submitted findings. The investigation, he said, demonstrated willful disregard for policy and carelessness or violation of safety rules. He told the Chronicle he can't rule out any other officers being disciplined or fired. I think it is fair to say for anybody who watches the video that it shocks the conscience, Essex said. We have over 650 men and women who work at our office every day. When this kind of conduct emerges, it is my job as a leader to call it out. Ward had serious health problems and had difficulty walking, talking, and breathing after being injured in a car crash 2 decades ago, his family said. He was dependent on a caretaker. Before releasing the body camera footage, officials said one of the deputies had used a carotid restraint during the incident, raising questions about the tactic that incapacitates a person by cutting off blood to their brain and has come under scrutiny due to its potential to kill. Agencies around the country, including the San Francisco Police Department, have banned the move. And it's not clear what the story is in Santa Cruz. I've had some inquiries of our current police chief, Andy Mills, and I got the response that it's in our manual, that is, say, the manual governing police conduct, which is their series of general orders that supposedly govern the police department in Santa Cruz. When I wrote him back saying, can you please tell me where, he told me, go find it yourself. And I believe there is something regarding carotid artery, the difference between chokeholds and strangleholds, but it still hasn't been made clear to me what kind of oversight, what kind of documentation, what kind of limits are on these holds. And that hasn't been an issue I've been pressing lately myself, because one of the main things I've been concerned about has been lack of winter shelter and police behavior toward homeless people in the winter, which usually does not involve either chokeholds or strangleholds. So it does involve threats, either implied or explicit, without giving them alternate places to go. Continuing this story from Sonoma County, the video released Friday showed a, quote, multitude of problematic behaviors, one use of force expert said. You have an individual not following the law, and then you have an officer apparently not following policy, said Keith Taylor, a former New York City police sergeant and criminal justice professor at John Jay College in Manhattan. There are so many different factors that could play a role in how this ended up the way it did. The carotid restraint would be a part of that, but not the sole thing. Now, let's find a way to... somehow blame the victim rather than the police officers is, of course, my cynical response to that. Ward's death was the latest of several recently released videos of controversial Northern California police killings. This month, police in Ceres, Stanislaus County, released video of Officer Ross Bays fatally shooting 15-year-old Carmen Spencer Mendez as the boy fled through an orchard in August 2018. Guess they took a while releasing that video. The boy was armed with a handgun but was running away when Bays fired more than a dozen shots without saying a word. Enough said, I guess. Days later, authorities in Contra Costa County released videos of Officer Andrew Hall fatally shooting 33-year-old Newark resident Ladember Arboleda in November 2018. Again, quite a delay in getting that video out, as he attempted to flee Danville police in his car. The video showed Hall running towards Arboleda's car before opening fire and killing him. Arboleda was unarmed and not suspected of any crime before police began chasing him following reports of a suspicious person in a residential neighborhood. Both officers were apparently cleared in the shootings, and I noticed the race of any of the officers, the victims, is not mentioned in these article. Sonoma County has had controversial police killings in the past, most notably the 2013 death of Andy Lopez. In that case, the 13-year-old was shot dead by a sheriff's deputy who mistook his toy AK-47 for a real rifle, prompting outrage in the community. The county paid $3 million to Andy's family without admitting wrongdoing. The deputy who shot the boy, Eric Gilhouse, was cleared criminally after the DA concluded he had opened fire while acting in what he believed was self-defense. Alejandro Serrano is a San Francisco Chronicle staff writer, and he is one of the two writers of this article. Police video shows beating. Sonoma sheriff moves to fire deputies involved. That's in the December 21st San Francisco Chronicle.
Anonymously to a guy who's had his own struggle with Section 8 housing. What do you want to call yourself there, caller?
I'll call you Joe. You can call me anything you want, but I don't want to call myself anything.
I'll call you Joe, just for the hell of it.
Don't call me Joe. Call me another name.
How about Fred?
Okay. That's perfect.
Yeah, so it doesn't really matter what your name is. What matters is what's happened to you. You were telling me a moment ago that you've waited 12 years to rent an apartment, and now you're facing a dissolution. You're facing an end to that prospect in early January. Is that right?
Yeah, it's going to all my struggles of trying to stay alive every day and, you know, survive every day. You know, it's like you said, it's a disillusion. They think that you can just get up and I don't have transportation to go run around to all these places, you know, where they might have a rental. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Unless, you know, I don't even have a bicycle.
So you're outside at the moment?
No, I'm in my car.
How's that treating you?
It's actually been very good. It's a godsend. I finally fixed my roof. My roof's been leaking over my bed for many years, and just the other day I came up with another intelligent way to fix the leak, which is, you know, those are really tough to know where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been in your car?
Let me think, 18 years.
Wow. Living in your car 18 years or just owning your car 18 years?
No, living in my car.
Because it must have a pretty sturdy car, huh?
But the car trouble's been, it's lots of car trouble, and I have to get help from other people if my car is going to keep running.
Any problems with police or parking authorities?
Oh, yeah.
What's a typical example of something that's happened to you recently?
Well, yeah, they like to take a picture of you when they contact you. And I feel like, you know, that's exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I got, you know, about enough of that, and so I just, you know what I mean? It's like they already got everything on you. They, you know, but they ask you to pose for a picture. That's the latest.
Well, you should tell them there's a $200 charge for photos.
Yeah, I just look the other way, you know, like whether because I can't, you know, when you're cornered, you can't really do anything about it.
So when was the last time this happened, Fred?
Like less than a month ago.
And what were the circumstances, if you wish to say?
Well, I was just parked, you know, just surviving, you know. You know, just parked, you know, and, you know, somebody complained, which it's hard to believe, you know, but, you know.
Generally, where were you parked, more or less?
In the county.
In the city or in the county?
In the county.
And was your car legally registered and all that shit?
Oh, yeah.
And so, what was the nature of the, what did this, did the sheriff say to you?
It's just a regular rigmarole harassment,
Did he tell you to move, or did he just sort of...
Yeah, he told me to move.
Did you, in the county, there's a provision of the county code that allows for roadside resting. Did you...
But, you know, I'm like, I just, you know, at that point, I don't even care. You know, it's like, I'll just stay for as long as I can.
Did he give you a legal, or did it, I think it was a man, or was it a woman who was a...
A woman.
Did she give you a legal place to move to?
Nope.
Uh-huh. It sounds standard.
No, and they don't care about my life, you know.
Of course not.
And it's a nice young lady, and I've talked to her before, and there's always a cop on the outside, so there's two.
Great.
You know, one across the street, and I know him too, and they travel together.
Day or night that this happened?
This was at night. It was dark. I don't know what time it was.
Did they claim you'd been there for more than 72 hours?
Oh, yeah.
Had you?
Oh, yeah.
I see. So
I'm a protester.
Right. Well, if you weren't doing anything wrong, I perfectly understand that. You know, I don't think it's doing anything wrong.
No, I wasn't, like, outside my vehicle or anything. I just stay quiet and just in my own world, you know, my own peaceful existence, you know, trying to, you know, just live out every day, you know,
And you've been doing this for 18 years in the Santa Cruz County area, or?
Yeah, and I'm a senior. You know, I'm getting to be a senior.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, so that's, I lost a big part of my life. You know, and all my dreams of success and, you know, everything was taken away from me. Mostly the harassment from the sheriff, I would have to say.
Well, at least you kept your vehicle for 18 years. I've been hearing from people who have their vehicles get towed away for tickets.
Yeah, I got a bunch of tickets that I'm trying to get somebody to help me pay, and I got registration coming up, and it's not a lot of money, but I'm looking at around $500 if anyone out there wants to help me, you know, it's like...
Well, I'll put it out on the net. We're not broadcasting on the air because we were still looking for a studio space and a transmitter site, but we do go
out. You can transmit from my place.
Oh, really? I'll talk to you about that and when we finish with this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, long as it's not a lot of heavy duty equipment, you know what I mean?
All right, well, I will.
That'll be a top secret. We could put it in a top secret location, and
right.
I don't know what kind of electricity you need, but, you know.
I'll talk to you about that, because I think that's something we, at least the Free Radio Collective, has been looking for, and also any other people listening, we're looking
plus we can move it around.
That's been something that I guess we tried early on, tried to keep it in one spot after that, but
it's the thing with the cops, you know, that is wrecked my life. You know, and
mostly,
but I'm not gonna let them. I'm
right on.
You know, I have my faith and everything, and it's like that's what's keeping me going.
Have you ever used the church parking lot programs?
But I don't know anywhere. I don't know any churches. You know, because we could talk about the Bible and everything if I knew. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think they require you to be a Christian. There are a few churches, and one of them is part of an organization called the Association of Faith Communities, which got a grant and has set up a small, and I emphasize small, program for vehicles. Yeah, we can talk about this.
Anytime. This is Fred, you know.
And Fred, there's also, you know, there's a...
That's my real name.
My. Well, that's fine. Oh,
man, that's awesome, man.
It's weird. That's
my great-grandfather's name. He's
A
Spaniard. He's the best man I ever known in my life. And,
let me conclude this part of the conversation with you and tell you that, you know, again, you're invited to come to this Union of the Homeless meeting Sunday at 5 at the post office Food Now Bombs meal. And we do meetings every Wednesday, except on Christmas Day, which was yesterday, of course. But
Christmas Day.
Wednesday at noon at the Sub Rosa, which is, you know where the Sub Rosa is? It's a bookstore.
By the bike church.
Exactly. Yeah, you got it. So you might want to consider coming to that. And also, if you want to call for some tips for people who are in their RVs or sleeping in their vehicles, safe places to park, sort of. Or a person who's kind of compiling complaints, Alicia Cool, who's the head of the president of the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless. Her phone number, if you got a pencil, I can give it to you. You can call her.
Yeah, it's weird. I just got it in my hand. I'm writing it down. Right as you said, Alicia Cool, I wrote it down.
Okay.
On a tablet. I write on tablets.
That's great. Her number is 831.
Yeah, yeah.
431.
What was that?
831-431.
Okay.
7766.
7766. Okay. Yeah. I think I've heard the name.
Yeah, she's been in the papers a little bit. She did part of a lawsuit when they tried to close down the Ross camp, and they did close it down eventually, but that we fought it for a couple weeks, and she's opened up a second campground more recently that was also closed down by the local city authorities in the Ross Camp area. Anyway, don't hang up. I'm going to, though, end this interview unless there's something more you want to say.
I noticed that the Salvation Army has a tent camp over by the metro
yard. Yeah, that's the 1220 River Camp.
Yeah, so, and it looks really... When I saw it, it looked really good. It looked really clean and organized. And so I just want to let people know.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's also really
Salvation Army.
It's really full.
You know,
It's really full and it's really expensive. Those are the two problems.
Oh, you got to pay to stay there?
No. You don't have to pay, but it's got a waiting list that's long. And it's also, it's very expensive for the city. They're spending about like $75,000 per person and they'll end in March when they're going to try to find someplace to move it. But, you know, the spaces are all pretty much taken up. And if you figure that there are 1,000 to 1,500 people outside just in the city alone.
You wouldn't believe on how little money I live on, so I can't understand why.
It's ridiculous. I mean, there are people out there who need to have the money spent and more broadly distributed, and it isn't happening. But you finish. I'm interrupting you. You finish what you're going to say, and then I'll talk to you a little bit about what I want to finish up with.
Yeah. That's great, Robert. Because if you really want to get me in with you and the homeless thing, I would be there. You know, I think that would be therapy for me.
Well, it might be, or it might be a pain in the ass. Depends on how you like it.
No. I believe the homeless, this whole thing, I don't care what they say about the homeless. Their unalienable rights have been taken away.
Hear, hear. I hear you.
And I don't care who it is. I don't care what their condition is. I'm all for them, right? And I don't, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't care. They need help, and they don't need to be, they don't need to be treated less than anyone else.
You're here. I'm going to leave it there, Fred, but don't go away.
All right.
A long-haired preacher's come out every night. I try to tell you what's wrong and what's right. But when asked about something to eat, they will answer in voices so sweet. You will eat by and by in that glorious land in the sky. Way up high, work and pray, live on hay. You get by in the sky when you die. That's the lie the starvation army they play. And they shout and they clap and they pray. When they got all your coins on the drum, they will tell you when you're on the bum. You will eat by and by in that glorious land in the sky. Way up high, work and pray, live on hay. You get by in the sky when you die. That's why holy rollers and jumpers come out. And they roll and they jump and they shout. I give your money to Jesus, they say. And you'll eat on that glorious day. You will eat by and by in that glorious land in the sky. Way up high, work and pray, live on hay. You'll get by in the sky when you die. That's right, working folks of all countries unite. Side by side, we for freedom will fight. When this world and its wealth we have gained, to the correctors we'll sing this refrain. You will eat by and by when you learn how to cook and how to fry. Chop some wood, do you good, and you'll eat in that sweet by and by.
By Utah Phillips, the preacher and the slave. And here's another story of police behavior from the San Francisco Chronicle of December 19th. San Francisco police show video of cop shooting man by Matthias Gaffney. Armed with a glass bottle, Jamaica Hampton zigzags along a Mission District street on the morning of December 7th, dodging two San Francisco police officers he had attacked just moments before. Suddenly, he darts between two cars and appears to run toward one of the officers, who shoots him three times, critically injuring him. That was the scene that played out on video from police body cameras and surveillance footage released Tuesday night at a raucous town hall meeting in the Mission. After about 30 seconds of running back and forth near the intersection of 23rd and Mission Streets with two officers chasing him with guns drawn, Hampton, 26, came within feet of Officer Sterling Hayes, who fired six rounds, the videos showed. An injured Hampton attempted to rise from the ground, and Officer Christopher Flores fired one shot. It's unclear whether Flores' shot hit Hampton. The videos played before a standing room only crowd at Cesar Chavez Elementary School, two blocks from the shooting. Hampton remains in critical condition at San Francisco General Hospital. On Monday, the San Francisco District Attorney's Office charged him with assault with a deadly weapon, assault upon a police officer, threats to an officer, and vandalism for an unrelated incident. As the videos played before the public on a large screen, irate office audience members shouted out, "Cowards!" and "Was that justified?" and "This is murder!" In front of the auditorium stage, police displayed in large photos of the Grey Goose vodka bottle Hampton used to hit Flores in the face and head. A second poster board of photos showed Flores' bloodied face in the back of his neck. Chief Bill Scott said the town hall was held for transparency, but he added that it was too soon to reach a judgment about the actions of the officers. He explained to the audience how a bottle, by law, can be considered a deadly weapon. Commander Robert O'Sullivan read a statement about what prompted the officers to fire their handguns. Mr. Hampton was still holding the glass bottle and closed the distance between himself and the passenger officer. The passenger officer discharged his issued duty weapon, O'Sullivan said. After being shot, Mr. Hampton went down to the ground, rose to his knees, and then began to move in the direction of the injured driver officer. The injured driver officer discharged his duty weapon. In other words, shot him. Like this kind of sanitized language they used. After Hayes' body camera video played, the atmosphere at the meeting became volatile. At one point, a man describing himself as Hampton's brother asked audience members to stop yelling. Eve Greenberg, who introduced himself as a friend of Hampton, told the crowd that they met while he moved at a farmer's market. Well, he worked at a farmer's market. She said he worked in Oakland as a waiter. He was afraid of being a statistic, and he knew he could look like a threat, she said, saying he was physically fit and muscular. He really wanted to be a part in some way with foster youth because that was his background, and he wanted to see children thrive. Greenberg said she was disgusted watching the shooting and her friend trying to run away from the police, seeing my friend look like a scared animal not knowing where to move. Other audience members said the police failed to create time and distance in their pursuit of Hampton. They repeatedly questioned how lethal force could be used when Hampton carried only a glass bottle. Police also released the 9/11 call precipitating the shooting. A distraught woman described how a man had broken into her home that morning, that the intruder had asked her twice if there was a man in the house before leaving. As the two officers responded, a second 9/11 call came from another woman who said she saw a man trying to break into cars, including two parked police cars. The caller said the man may have an iron bar broken off a fence. A business surveillance video showed Hampton crossing the street right in front of officers Hayes and Flores. The officers had said that Hampton matched the description they got from the 9/11 calls. As Hayes opens his passenger door, Hampton attacks him. Hayes fends him off by kicking Officer Flores, who is driving, runs around to help, and Hampton strikes him with a bottle, knocking off his body camera. At that point, both officers pursue Hampton, yelling, "Get on the ground!" Hayes attempts to pepper spray Hampton, but he later said in the video he accidentally hit himself with it. Several audience members said he likely impaired himself with the spray before he fired the six shots. After the shooting, a body camera captured a frantic Hayes yelling, "God damn it, man. Fuck, I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to fucking do this." Another officer tries to calm him down. Later in the footage, Flores is seen with a bloody nose. It was the first San Francisco police shooting since June 2018, and it will likely be the first incoming district attorney Chelsea Budin or Boudin, has to handle. And that's San Francisco Police Show video of cop shooting man by Matthias Gaffney. And then there's a, it's not really a follow-up story, it's a previous story about the in-custody death produced by Sonoma County Deputy, that's the death of David Glenn Ward. I was reading about that earlier in this broadcast. Here's another story about that, dated December 5th from KQED News. A Sonoma County Sheriff's deputy, police say, performed a carotid hold on a Petaluma man shortly before he died last week, used a similar neck hold on a woman in 2015, and then lied about it in court. This was not part of the San Francisco Chronicle story. David Glenn Ward, 52, died after a car chase and struggle with sheriff's deputies and police on November 27th. Officers from Sebastopol and Sonoma County deputies incorrectly suspected that Ward was driving a stolen vehicle, according to the Santa Rosa Police Department, which is investigating the incident. The Marin County Coroner's Office has not yet issued its report on Ward's cause of death, and I guess still hadn't in the September 21st story several weeks later that I read earlier. Sonoma County Deputy Jason Little tried to pull Ward over just before 6 a.m. Ward had reported his vehicle stolen 3 days before, and Little was responding to a report from an off-duty detective that the vehicle was located near Frey Road in Sebastopol. Ward stopped his car, authorities said, then took off again, leading Little and two Sebastopol police officers on a 7-minute chase. Sonoma County Sheriff's Deputy Charles Blunt arrived on the scene. All four officers approached the vehicle, according to the Santa Rosa Police Department. Police say Ward ignored their orders to open the car door. When Ward rolled down the driver's side window, officers tried to pull him through the opening. Ward struggled, according to officers, biting the two deputies. Officers struck and tried to use a taser on Ward during the struggle. Then Blunt reached through the car window and attempted to perform a carotid hold around Ward's neck, according to officials. The hold involves restricting the vascular arteries on the sides of the subject's neck with an officer's arm. Police finally extracted Ward from the vehicle by breaking the other window and pulling him through the passenger side door. Minutes after handcuffing Ward, authorities said deputies noticed he had stopped breathing. Ward was pronounced dead at a local hospital. The Sonoma County Sheriff's Department is conducting an internal investigation into whether the two deputies complied with departmental policies during their attempts to arrest Ward. The sheriff's current policy, and we're not quite sure what it is for Santa Cruz, allows deputies to use the carotid when confronting a violent or potentially violent suspect, but the move can turn deadly if applied incorrectly. On Tuesday, Sonoma County Law Enforcement Civilian Oversight Body recommended the sheriff ban the use of the carotid hold entirely. Blunt has faced multiple allegations of using excessive force in the past. Sonoma County-based defense and civil attorney Isaac Schweiger said he also lied on the stand about using a carotid hold. Is it as dishonest a cop as he is a violent one, Schweiger said. That's a horribly dangerous combination. Blunt and an attorney who previously represented him did not respond to emails requesting comment. In 2015, Schweiger represented a woman named Celeste Moon, who Blunt arrested in January of that year for jaywalking and resisting arrest, documents show. During testimony at a hearing in Moon's criminal case, Blunt said he did not use a neck hold on Moon. And then we played the video evidence for the court, Schweiger said. The video, taken by a bystander, showed Blunt wrapping his arm around Moon's neck and throwing her to the ground. That matter was dismissed. Judge Jamie Thistlewaite directed prosecutor Scott Imura to place Blunt's testimony in the DA's files documenting officers with credibility issues. Notice that he didn't direct that there be some prosecution or suggest that that happen. Somebody else tried this on a person in under these circumstances. I think they'd be quickly taken to trial or at least charged. Prosecutors have a duty to disclose past dishonesty by law enforcement witnesses to defendants under a 1963 U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Brady v. Maryland. Chief Deputy District Attorney Brian Stabell wrote in an email that his office did review the case to determine if Blunt should be placed on the DA's Brady list and asked the sheriff for any evidence of relevant misconduct in his file. We were notified there was none, Stabell wrote. He said he couldn't disclose whether Blunt was ultimately placed on the list. Mr. Schwager asked, question, did you use a keratin chokehold in this event? Answer, I did not. Question, did you ever put your hands or your arms around Ms. Moon's neck? Answer, I did not. And then, of course, attached to the same story is the apparently the video shown. It shows that he did something that looks very much like that, what he had denied. In 2015, Sonoma County settled a federal lawsuit with a man named Marlon Whitmore, who alleged that deputies, including Blunt, used excessive force on him in 2011. Civil rights attorney John Burris, who represented Whitmore in this case, said the settlement was for about $375,000. Lloyd Beardsley filed a suit in 2016, claiming that he was complying with the officer's commands when Blunt tackled him, punched him in the face, and arrested him for public intoxication, fighting, and resisting arrest. The fighting charge was dismissed, and a jury ultimately found Beardsley not guilty of the other two charges. My client felt completely victimized by Blunt, who, when he felt that Blunt should have been protecting him, Beardsley's civil attorney Katie Young wrote in an emailed response. She said the lawsuit was settled for a low monetary amount. In court filings, the attorneys representing the county and Blunt disputed the plaintiff's excessive force claims in both cases. You don't say. Blunt also used a keratin hold on a severely intoxicated man in 2015, police records show. The man was initially unconscious but woke up and became, quote, uncooperative when deputies tried to handcuff him. Then Blunt used the hold. The Sonoma County Sheriff's Office said they couldn't comment on Blunt's past conduct because of the ongoing investigation into Ward's death by Santa Rosa Police. Which, of course, is ridiculous. What does the past conduct have to do with their investigation into Ward's death? They're covering their asses, is my immediate reaction. Santa Rosa Lieutenant Dan Marincinic said via email that his department is focused on the criminal investigation of the incident. If there is a nexus between the current patterns of an officer or deputy's behavior and the criminal investigation we are currently conducting, that is something we would then look into in greater detail, Marincinic wrote. And this is the story in custody death. Sonoma County deputy lied in court about past keratin hold by Suki Lewis. December 5th story by KQED News. The KQED News story, Moms for Housing Court Hearing Delayed by Kate Wolf. Story from December 25th, updated today. In the living room of the house at 2928 Magnolia Street, a big paper sign advises visitors to remove their shoes. Large black letters identify the space as a baby zone. Dominique Walker's one-year-old has been learning to walk in the carpeted living room of the West Oakland home. The family has been settling in since Walker, 34, and her co-occupant, Samara Karim, 41, entered the house without permission in November. The property is owned by a real estate investment company in Redondo Beach, California. The two mothers, both homeless, occupied the house to not only find shelter, but also draw attention to the vast number of properties in Oakland that currently stand vacant, often because of real estate speculation amid the city's housing crisis. Of course, that's something we need to research here in Santa Cruz. If anybody wants to do that and needs some help, give me a call at 831-423-4833. This comes as a recent federal report found a 2.7% increase in homelessness nationwide, driven almost entirely by a 16.4% increase in California. Since occupying the house, the two women have done their best to make it a home in time for the holidays. Their Christmas tree is decorated, and Walker says they plan to build a gingerbread house. But their stay may be short-lived. In early December, Walker and Karim received an eviction notice from Wedgwood LLC, which owns the investment company that owns the house. The women were dealt a blow on Tuesday when Alameda County Superior Court Judge Patrick McKinney issued a tentative ruling in favor of Wedgwood that said the claims do not appear to provide a basis for a valid claim of right to possession and instead contend only that the claimants have a right to occupy the subject premises. Tenant rights attorney Leah Simon Weisberg said her clients still plan to make their case. We'll be talking about why housing is a human right and why that is a basis for the court to interject itself and say, yes, they can stay, said Weisberg. The fact that the judge wants to hear what we have to say is encouraging. And there's a, looks like a tweet or a Facebook entry from Nikki Fortunato Boss. This Christmas Eve, I stand with Moms for Housing and urge jobs at Wedgwood to halt the eviction and negotiate with the moms who offered to purchase the home. Have a heart this holiday season, Wedgwood. Oakland is watching. Moms are organizing. Hashtag housing is a human right. On Thursday, the two occupants had prepared to contest the eviction in court, only to find that in the morning the judge had postponed the hearing until Monday. Among the women's many supporters are Oakland City Council President Rebecca Kaplan and council members Nikki Fortunato Bass, Dan Kelb. What we are asking for is simple, Wedgwood. Sit down with Moms for Housing and negotiate the purchase of this home so they can stay here in this community, said Bass. Wedgwood, however, said they won't negotiate with the women while they are unlawfully living in the property. Unexpectedly, the Southern California-based youth shelter program Shelter 37 inserted themselves into the showdown on Monday, here come the poverty pimps, urging the women to leave the property so it could be converted into a shelter space. I encourage Mothers for Housing to voluntarily leave the property as quickly as possible so that we can train disadvantaged Oakland youths, give them jobs, and teach them skills, said shelter founder and former NFL player James Washington in a statement. That interjection, however, has raised suspicions among the women's supporters, some of whom are questioning the organization's ties to Wedgwood. An earlier version of this article stated the women broke into the home. It has been edited to clarify that they entered the home without permission. Time for another round from Utah Phillips.
I turned on my radio, spun the dial, thought I'd listen to some news for a while. I grabbed the knob, spun it around, got NPR. Here's what I found. Real news? Hardly a trace, just one damn marathon marketplace. The Nasdaq's up, the Dow's in the cellar, and NPR sold out to Rockefeller. Hostile takeover. Real hostile. Well, I hear about all the antitrust and all the day traders who bit the dust, mergers, buyouts, and acquisitions, low-down crooks in high positions, wheelers, dealers, and CEOs fired and paid off through the nose, buying yachts and fancy homes with the bailout money from the savings and loans, and I get pissed off, that is. It's dot-com this and dot-com that. The underwriters are getting fat on airwaves stole from you and me by a bunch of thieves called the FCC. They don't give a damn what we want and need. They've all caved into corporate greed and sold us out to the ruling class. Well, the whole damn bunch, kiss my dot-com. This is a family show, folks. FCC says, watch your language. English. What's yours? I got tired of being treated like a veg, so I called up the station and canceled my pledge. In a mighty act of liberation, sent the money off to my community station. I said, I love you. But if you blow it, I'll sure as hell let you know it. I'll knock the radio off the shelf, buy a transmitter, and do it myself. Whitebeard the Pirate. This is radio station HOBO, broadcasting on a vagrancy of 60 to 90 days, signing off for now.
And that was Utah Phillips talking NPR blues. And now we meander to the Food Now Bombs meal on Sunday the 22nd. Catch a few voices there.
King Will.
Curtis DuPont.
Curtis, you're up. By the way, I like your red hat. Very nice. Do you say $300 tickets who got you down?
Well, yeah, because, you know, they give you, like, say you go to the river, right? And, like, at Sycamore Grove, at their discretion, they can give you a $320 ticket. And it seems like I always get them, even though there's people that are camping there full time and you
they
know.
Don't get them?
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, and then it's just it's ungodly. It's
unfair.
It's institutional to charge poor people fucking fines like that. It's just not.
When was the last time you got when was the last time you got such a ticket?
When they closed down the Kent City.
The little one or the big one?
That's Houston.
The one by Ross.
Or shit.
The one in November or the one in May?
I don't think it's the first
I have no idea.
No, was it happened a month? You're talking about a month ago or 6 months ago?
Come back. 6 months ago?
Yeah, I remember. Okay. So, any tickets since then?
Let's see.
For you?
Yeah, sitting on the train tracks. Another $400 ticket.
How long ago?
I don't know, like 6 months ago, 8 months ago.
Anything recently that's plagued you?
Oh, yeah. I had two camping tickets and two no light on my bike tickets. It went up to $36,000 from the collections agency, and they wanted $2,200 for the first payment.
So how did you deal with it?
I ignored it, because what are you going to do, you know?
That's your hat, for one thing.
Well, that's not practical. I mean,
it's not going to work.
No. I mean, even drunk drivers get to pay $40 a month or whatever it is, you know? Not like $2,400 for the first payment, you know, and if you don't pay it off, it's probably forfeit that, you know?
Any troubles with cops or sheriffs with warrants?
Well, not really.
That's good.
But, you know, I don't do anything to get in trouble for it, so, you know, what the hell?
But you're not entirely feeling secure that it might not happen if you were pulled aside. They say, aha, all these tickets, come with us.
Well, you know, that's always a possibility, but, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, if you live on a fixed income and you get $300 tickets, that's just uncool. You know, a $35 ticket, that might be, you know, payable. But they do it, they target poor people that are, like, homeless, you know, and the reason they're homeless is because they don't have money to get a place, and then they, you know, charge them all this money, so they're never going to get off the street. You know, you get two or three of those, you know, it's like a month, let's say, you're screwed.
So,
I mean, I got two or three of them, like, in a four-month period.
Well put. And we've been talking to the, to you, and you, of course,
board of directors, of Be Here Now Street Movement.
All right. Well, keep us posted on what's going on with the movement.
Yeah, don't let the propaganda fool you. Because it's 1% that people should be looking at, because that's who's ripping everybody off.
I tend to agree. And we've been talking with?
I already told you.
You did. Thank you, Greg.
Yeah.
Thank you, Greg.
With?
Seth Bahu.
Go, Seth.
I'm worried about my friend Susan, who used to hang out around the post office clock tower area.
What does she look like?
She's in her 50s, and she has blonde hair, and she's very petite, very small, and talks with a gravelly voice, and sometimes yells out, you know, epithets, because I think she might have, like, something like Tourette.
Does she have a walker, or does she have a wheelchair?
Yeah, she has a big shopping cart, usually.
Okay.
But I haven't seen her in a while, and I saw the name Susan on the list of people that died recently. I'm kind of disturbed about
that. Not sure if it's the same Susan.
Yeah, does anybody know Susan? Or where the hell is Susan?
Keep asking Jess Keith, I think I suggested.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Always, I didn't ask Keith, always around the post office Susan was.
All right, well,
she drinks a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, if any of that description clicks in my mind when I'm talking to such a person, I will try to remember it's Seth who wants to talk to her.
Yeah. Come and talk to me, Susan.
How can you be reached, Seth? You come to Food Not Bombs.
Yeah, and you can call me, you know. 246-3554.
Okay, and I will call you if I hear anything,
yeah.
If I don't lose your number.
Yeah.
I'll give you my card again. We're talking with...
Nope.
A man who has very little, but he's free at last.
Yep.
How long were you held?
Just 6 days. But the day I came out, I placed my stuff in the possession of a very kind person who was then arrested 4 hours later, and all my stuff was thrown away, including my meds and my money, my ID, my phone.
Not as kind as you would think, then. Or did he get victimized?
It was a she.
She get victimized?
Absolutely.
Now, was the police?
She's mentally ill and has just been, it's pathetic, but I'm going to be digging into that as well as the stuff that,
now,
it's ridiculous how, what happened.
What was the final outcome at 1220, by the way? You were a resident there for a while.
Yeah, I, like everybody there, I was a typical miscreant, just like they brought me in as, just like they bring any other camper in as, and but I did break their silly rules. Well, I got caught breaking their rules about six times.
Rules are we talking about?
Well, you shouldn't.
If you wish.
Well,
to
when
say.
when they I came in 3 minutes late, and so they wouldn't let me stay in. So I dug a hole under the fence and came in anyway. And that's, they don't like people that dig holes under the fences.
Kind of the gopher approach.
Well, they wouldn't let me retrieve my sleeping bag, and this was a while back. That wasn't why I got kicked out the last time.
Last time was because, if you wish to say.
Just an accumulation of stuff. Something that I'm not going to say just because it wasn't my thing, but I took the rap for somebody else.
Before or after Eric Snickars left his job?
It was after.
Eric Snickars was the sort of the executive director of the 1220 River Street Camp, which is a series of closely shoved together tents. It's the $75,000 per month campground that I have spoken of before. They recently got showers, which was an improvement. And I've gotten mixed reports about it. I'd hope to. I'm not sure what the Union of the Homeless is finding out about it recently. They used to have some people inside the camp who were giving reports, and one of the activists who was inside, Frank Sanchez, I believe his name is, also joined the Catch Committee, but he was evicted from that camp too, as well as driven away from the Camp Phoenix, the one that was created by Union of the Homeless activists and homeless folks themselves at the site of the old Camp Ross. And so far there has been no protective homeless encampment forming this winter.